At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And welcome back to Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. And for those that are listening in, if I'm correct, this is going to be one of our very first episodes of the new year, 2024. So thanks for coming on back and checking out. And, you know, all of you had a wonderful holiday season, however you celebrate. So let's welcome back a guest who I met back in summer 2018 at the NCIA's Cannabis Business Summit in San Jose, I think it was. And then later that fall, I brought him on Blunt Business, and we had a great conversation. So I'm happy and thrilled to go ahead and welcome back to the program the CEO and co-founder of Ziel, Z-I-E-L, Arthur de Cordoba. Arthur, thanks for coming on back.
Good morning to you. Good to be back on the show.
Oh my God, it's been so long. I mean, really, when I heard, I saw the name, I'm like, come on, you're going to be Arthur? This is great. Thank you, Kate, and the folks, you know, your team there to go and get this all set together. So last time, Arthur, we spoke about a new product you were showcasing at that time called Apex. And now we've got several generations since then, but a patent-pending radio frequency processing technology to reduce total yeast and mold count in cannabis. And I remember when we first initially talked, it was on the Grassroots Marketing Series, where you specifically, you really opened my eyes. The conversation we had opened my eyes to the overlying subject we have that we regularly address is compliance. I remember we were speaking specifically about California at the time, and just looking at where, you know, there's this staggering of compliance standards across the board. And I mean, hell, since then, I still talk about CanTrust, the company in Canada that basically, you know, $77 billion worth of product destroyed because of some mistakes they made in terms of where they were housing their cannabis. And that company's never been able to recover. They had to change their name. They had to go through everything. So I've thought about that from our initial conversation, Arthur, that area about compliance, I stood tall across, and I've continuously rotated this topic on this program on a regular basis. And I've always mentioned the CanTrust story since it happened as proof positive for companies in here, no matter what states are opening up for cannabis, whether it's medical or adult use, for every state that opens up. And whatever the Cannabis Control Board says should be the compliance standards to be met, don't reach the bare minimum. Reach for higher than that. Be proactive. Be forward-thinking on that respect. Now, going back to Apex, you're on the seventh generation of technology with Apex 7. It's an organic, natural kill step that effectively destroys harmful bacteria in cannabis with near zero THC loss, and it does so with 3 times the throughput of any other decontamination process on the market. So, initially, let's talk about Apex, the evolution of it.
Good. Well, again, good to be back. And it has been 5 years, and so much has changed, and so little has changed in the cannabis market. And as you're talking about this compliance thing, compliance is not sexy. And it's said in the war, you know, armies, you know, fight battles, but logistics win wars. And smart people think about compliance in regulated industries. And cannabis is a regulated industry and becoming more so. And it's really a hybrid between, you know, farming and medical pharmaceutical. And I come out of the pharmaceutical business. I worked for AstraZeneca. Our head of sales works for Glaxo. So we very much have that compliance mindset. And we take that mindset in a data-driven approach in how we provide this service, that every customer, every cultivator needs to solve this problem. And if you're not solving the problem, you're probably having some sleepless nights. So as you said, you know, the contamination, you know, it's something that everybody needs to address. It doesn't get a lot of attention. But when I talk to investors or people out of the market saying, well, what do you do? And really, you know, we were the first, along with my good friend Jill Ellsworth at Willow, that, you know, we both you know, agreed that we started this category back in 2016. So we're now 7 years into it, and it is something, again, every cultivator needs to address. So imagine that the flower market, these are just round numbers here, but if you say the cannabis market is $20 billion total, and it's north of that, 25, 30, but call it 20. Mm-hmm. Half that market is flower, $10 billion, and a wholesale price is $5 billion. You've got how many operators in the United States need to go from, you know, growing the product to get it to that dispensary shelf, and they've got to get through that regulatory, I call it the, you know, mouse hole. And there are really three mouse holes to go through. So, you know, $5 billion worth of product to get to the other side has to go through one of the three technologies, you know, that are most prevalent on the market today. So it is a not a well-known space, but an absolutely critical space for the cultivator to remain in business. And as we've demonstrated, there's a lot of money to be made by raising your levels, you know, up to full 100% compliance. Every cultivator has some degree of microbial infection, some degree.
Right.
It varies. We've seen people who have great operations for a while at 1% failure rate, then all of a sudden it'll balloon up to 20%. We've seen people at 40% failure rate. But if you stop and think, and back to 2018, I remember how cultivators talked about this. Yeah. They said, we have no problem.
Okay.
Then it moved to, we don't have a problem, but the guys across the street have got a problem because my product is clean. Then it moved to, we have a problem, but it doesn't happen too much. And then as cannabis has matured, CFOs come into the business and they ask the following question. Well, I just gave you $20 million to grow this, you know, greenhouse, but you're failing 20% of the product. And then the cultivator says, the old guy says, because, yeah, but, you know, we've got this manufacturing operation. We just, you know, throw it over the wall to them and, you know, it solves the problem. And the CFO says, no, it doesn't solve the problem because our manufacturer is buying trim and biomass for 20 cents on the dollar. And so you're throwing away 80% of the profits on this. So round numbers, if you're growing $10 million for flower and you're failing 20%, you're leaving $2 million on the table. Yeah, you can sell it for, you know, $100,000, $200,000, you know, yeah, biomass. Well, you've just effectively just thrown away $1.8 million. And the CFO says, no more of that.
No.
So we're going to have we're going to address this up front. Mm-hmm. We're going to incorporate into our SOPs. And that's really where the industry has moved to. Instead of being a reactive step, I failed lab testing. Now what do? People have realized, just like lawyering, pay for your lawyers up front. It's cheaper. And that's what the industry is moving to incorporate this, some call it kill step, microbial control step, in your post-harvest processing, just before you go out testing the first time. It's the right way to do it. It's efficient, it's effective, and it can save and increase your top line revenue and your profitability. And now, also sleep better at night.
Right, right. A couple things I want to unpack. Number one, Jill Ellsworth, Will Industries. We love her. We've had her on Blunt Business many times as well. We'll always love to have her on back. When it comes to third-party testing labs, you know, really it's just a matter, I think, that some companies just would use it as just part of a checklist. Okay, we're just going to troubleshoot. All right, if the third party says it's fine, we're fine. We're not going to do our own independent testing. We'll trust the third parties. But we've seen, you know, not all third-party labs are, you know, going to have the best. They're going to hold on and give you the reports what they are, but, you know, it's still upon the companies to go in and work on their own standards. And on top of that, you know, when I've talked enough about compliance here, okay, so if I say you need to be above and beyond the state-approved compliance standards, okay, so what's that going to be? There's a universal standard that we've heard a lot about, good manufacturing practices, GMP. And, you know, we have people that have been consulting in that end to talk about that kind of deal. I said that, you know, she couldn't go that route. What do you think about GMP as a universal standard? Do you think it meets the criteria that would be required that would work good with a product like yours, with Apex or others, that would be enough to take care of, you know, peace of mind of what the company's doing?
So it's a topic that is very much at the forefront in the European market because it is solely a medical market. There is no rec for all intents and purposes in the EU. or in the UK. But they do require, because of the medical market, that all cultivators, a product being grown within the EU and or imported, come from a GMP facility. GMP is not in itself a regulatory threshold of a number that you need to hit. GMP is a process. And here, the Europeans have a very different approach to testing. In the United States and Canada, I call it, it's reactive testing. You know, you test every single thing that comes out, right? Each time. Mm-hmm. Flip that around. Like the pharmaceutical industry, you get your process validated up front. Yes, they'll come audit you once a year, double check. But this repeat testing for every batch that comes out does not exist in that regime. So you validate it up front, and then it's a rigorous validation, and then you just go. So it's not good business for the lab, the testing labs here in or over in Europe. It's a great business here in the United States to be in the testing business. Everything needs to be tested. So it's a very different approach. We're with a number of European customers over, and we're in Portugal, Macedonia, Germany, more coming in Malta and Czech, and our product, our technology slots in well to a GMP process, principally because we come out of the food business, we know how this is done. We assist all our customers in their GMP onboarding, and then they're good to go.
Yeah.
But GMP here in the United States is not, as we're a rec market, and not a, yes, we have a medical market, but it's primarily rec. GMP has really fallen off the radar here in the United States, unless you, and we can't import to Europe right now. So there's no incentive in a rec market and in a market that we can't export out of to pay for the extra processing of GMP up front. And your state regulator doesn't care if you're a GMP because their code is, I'm going to test every batch that comes out.
Now, Canada also does go out with GMP practices, but I mean, for those that are advocating that companies go GMP compliant, would you recommend it yourself?
It is the gold standard. I mean, it's not just our technology. The operator, whether they're doing GACP or then moving to post-harvest GMP, and it is a difference. GMP doesn't play in the cultivation side. It's GACP, good agricultural cultivation practices. And GMP plays in the post-harvest side of the equation. So it costs money to go through it. It costs money to keep it up. But if my market is the United States, I'm not being rewarded for it in the current regulatory framework.
Right.
In the current regulatory framework. And now that is I'm dangling that because if and when the FDA takes over the rule book, they could mandate entire industry has to meet GMP standards in post-harvest production. And you know, we don't know if and when that's going to come, but in my humble opinion, that's the only, I don't see you rewarded for it up front here, as long as we can't export to Europe, which does require it.
Yep. And just
Canada does, because federally approved, Canada does export to Europe. And
right.
All those facilities are GMP in Canada, enabling them to export to the EU.
And I remember for years I've been calling Canada basically like the OPEC of cannabis because they're going to be able to export to, say, South America or Australia or Europe in those cases because of all the inventory they have. All the extra supply they have to get it somewhere because of all the restrictions they have in terms of having online stores or what they can sell. And it just, we always kept looking at that time, 5 years ago, was the rollout of federal legalization for Canada and cannabis. And, you know, the track record they've had over there, we've seen the bumps that they've gone through. And obviously we've seen a lot of companies want to go and build, you know, million square foot facilities and start growing up the wazoo. But it's like, are you taking care of the product? Are you testing? Are you making sure there's not any issues? And it doesn't matter if it's all greenhouse, I mean, obviously, we know there's a lot of issues when it comes to outdoor. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but that's one of those things where, you know, it's a concern to me why I see that across. Now, with Zeal, just to make the point, it's not just cannabis and not just hemp, because you've also been doing this for a long time when it comes to nuts, seeds, dates, prunes, and other edibles. It's been a lot across there, so it's not just here. That's why they're such important about where I get to talk to you about this and the understanding of it, because you go across multiple industries in understanding this as well. Agriculture, it still comes down to that. Now, the other product you also have available, it has been recently introduced, is the RFX. Newest generation of radio frequency technology to control microbial pathogens in cannabis while retaining product sensory qualities. It has a greater than 99% pass rate and the highest volume throughput in the industry, with the capacity to process 160 pounds of cannabis in an 8-hour shift. So this most recently was introduced. Don't know if you went to MJ Biz and introduced, but obviously it's out there for folks. What can you tell us about the new product line?
So the RFX is the culmination of 3 years of R&D. It was a joint partnership between Stalum, our OEM in Italy, ourselves, Zeal, with feedback from our customers from hundreds of tons processed, and our stakeholder Ammunition Group. And as the CEO of Stalum has said, Arthur, we make fantastic machines that work, have 99.99% uptime, but we don't make love to them. So this is our, what I call my my Northern Italians in the shadow of the Austrian Alps. They're not the Gucci Italians. They're not known for their styling. They make really strong industrial machines. So we reached out to a gentleman named Robert Bruner here in San Francisco, where Zeal is based. And we said, Robert, you kind of know what you're doing here. Help us come up with a unit that's half the size, that is has a great user interface, looks good, but we need to have the same throughput, but a half the footprint, and make it look better, with better user interface. And Robert took a look again. Robert worked for a little company called Apple. He started their industrial design group, hired Johnny Ive. And so we engaged Ammunition to design that unit. So we unveiled that at MJ Biz this year. But same throughput as large machine, half the footprint. And one important thing, instead of requiring 480 volt, it runs on 240. So for cultivators that don't have access to 480 power, that's an important thing if you're, you know, a rural operation outside. And so, or outside a metropolitan area.
Wonderful. Amazing where you get, you know, the resources, the people that you bring on board to go and create together a 3-year in the making product to put that together. Arthur, we're going to go to commercial break. When we come on back, you know, I've already talked about this with several other guests on the program, but this is something where, like, if I had Arthur around and going to talk about this, I got to talk to you about this. So recently there was an investigation from NY Cannabis Insider, New York Cannabis Insider blog, that back in September they learned about some issues specifically about the outdoor cultivation in the regulated state of New York, and learning about what the issues about that. And for me, I was just having to ask the question about what is it about, if we're seeing the kind of issues that are going on in terms of contaminants being found in plants in outdoor grows, then why are outdoor grows being allowed in new states and other states in general? Should there be something to be addressed about that? We're going to talk about that after a short break, but here I'm with the CEO and co-founder of Zeal, Ziel.com. Make sure to go look at what we talked about earlier when it comes to Apex 7 and RFX. Take a look at that on the website as we go to commercial break. We'll be right back.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with Arthur De Cordova, the CEO and co-founder of Zeal. And Arthur, before the break, you know, I may have mentioned, you know, in 5 years, been doing this program now, almost 6 years, and learned a lot from doing this. And like I said, from the time you told me about, you know, just when it comes to yeast, mold, bacteria, and all the issues about that, at that NCIA show. It's taking me all, you know, full circle coming up here now and paying attention to stories like this. So there was a recent investigation in September that was conducted by the publication NY Cannabis Insider, and I talked to several attorneys about this to understand what was going on here, where the state's requirement that weed or cannabis would be grown outside and not indoors has led to high levels of bacteria, yeast, and mold among products that experts say should not reach consumers. And despite public health and safety mandates, state regulators have maintained a relatively hands-off approach to enforcement and left it up to farmers who are struggling to survive to decide whether their products are safe. And dozens of products that were tested showed state-certified labs have consistently broken the rules for reporting pesticides, heavy metals, and other contaminants. So before we get into what they actually learned about, the kind of risks that are involved with states like New York that allow outdoor cultivation, I mean, it's being allowed. I mean, obviously people feel like they're going to do it because it's just like with agriculture, growing outdoors instead of greenhouses. I don't even know why they would do it in New York with the climate they have. But when you look at states that allow this and the risk of doing outdoor cultivation, what would you say about that?
We have customers who are both indoor and outdoor, and they both face the same problems, right? One is not unique. Maybe the source is a little bit different, location. But we have a customer in Michigan that's all indoor. Last year, they did 16 tons processed with just one apex, 100% of their flower.
Wow.
We have another customer who's one of our tolling partners in Michigan, Hello Farms. And they just harvested 55,000 plants. So they're about plus minus, you know, 30, 35 tons of flower that's processed through two of our units. So both are achieving the end results. Both are, you know, different grow environments. But, you know, our technology, you know, solves those problems for both grow environments. With specific to New York, I don't know the details. I do know it is just, you know, outdoor. It's very small footprint also to protect the smaller guy. And I would say that regulators, you know, like the cultivators, they're feeling their way. How do we, you know, navigate through this? And they're trying to do the best job possible. It isn't always in the first step out of the gate, the best, most practical way. So my assumption will be the New York regulators will learn, they'll adapt, right. They'll make it rational. And often we see regulators doing irrational things, maybe with best of intentions, but they don't fit into the business practices and they're just not practical. So there's a retrenchment. You know, we saw it in, you know, through Nevada, we've seen it in Michigan. Every state is continually modifying their regulations, and the more the cultivators engage with the regulators instead of fighting them, the better outcomes for everyone.
But until they make those changes, and for those that want to go and feel like, well, listen, the third-party labs, a good part of the process, but not the most, not the only process you got to have. This is why I think with a product like Zeal, and listen, you want to call it an endorsement, okay, but it's a matter of that you need to have that peace of mind. And as you said, for those that are doing indoor or outdoor, when they've been using products from Zeal, they haven't been having these kind of problems. They've been able to curb those kind of issues because that's the extra fail-safe that you got to have within the process of cultivation. It's absolutely necessary. It's crucial. Now, when you talk about what the regulators should be doing and what their response to it, we have that. The Office of Cannabis Management in New York State is responsible for the rules around adult use and medical. They do not agree that the report from NY Cannabis Insider's findings indicated a significant health concern. So they had a spokesperson, Aaron Geidelman, speak and said that a high yeast and mold count does not equate to a threat to public health. Hang on to that quote for a second. Again, a high yeast and mold count does not equate to a threat to public health. Growing cannabis outdoors is not much different than growing tomatoes or corn or lettuce. It's a natural environment with microorganisms. And he says that the agency is aware of non-compliant test results, but has not detected serious or systemic problems with testing accuracy or compliance. So what they found in the report in here, which we can't verify or confirm, was their report says they have over 40 publicly available lab reports for some of New York's best-known brands that showed clearly non-compliant testing, misreported numbers, and missing results. So you mentioned before, they're going to make it, they're going to adapt, they're going to change, but this is why it's more important. You've got to make sure to take care of your own house.
Sure. And we started the conversation today, Jorge, is that the market's evolved. I don't have a problem. I do have a problem. Now I need to address this problem. How am I going to address it? So as the cultivators, now New York is a new market, young compared to the seasoned guys in Michigan or Nevada. They're just getting going. And so they're feeling their way too. But they will swing around to the best practices where, you know, take care of your business up front. And they'll realize that. They'll also sleep a lot better at night. I mean, there are three buckets. There's heavy metals, pesticides, and microbials. You can pretty much, you know, follow the rules. Pesticides, they're named. You know, the heavy metals, you know, comes from soil, pretty much you can arrest that one. The thing that keeps growers up at night is microbials, because they're everywhere. Microbial pathogens. It's just a fact of life. And you can approach it like an ostrich, or you can take it head on. And, you know, it's been demonstrated it's a lot cheaper financially to take it head on. So, you know, this is the way the industry is swinging. I'm sure the new cultivators will adapt to that. And I believe that the regulators will maybe widen their scope of what's good for public safety. Now, I'll say that California, taking a little bit of dig in my home state, took a very laissez-faire approach also on microbial testing. And they just cherry-picked the usual suspects, E. coli, Salmonella, and Aspergillus. There is no TYMC testing in California. You know, large smart, and no TAMC, no coliforms, no BTGN. So it's pretty liberal market here. So I'm not advocating one or the other, but I think that if the FDA, if you're looking over the horizon of what a regulation, I don't believe is going to get more lax. It's only going to tighten. And as evidenced in Colorado, you know, yeah, they wrote these laws, MED, but there's no enforcement for the first couple of years. They were under-resourced. Oh. And so then you started to see enforcement. And, you know, Denver Health was doing secret shoppers in dispensaries, taking product off the shelf because they weren't relying on MED. And a number of stories on this. And they tested the product and it failed microbial. And they kind of, you know, pulled MED's pants down. And MED got serious then and then started enforcing itself. And, you know, so regulations are only as strong as there's enforcement. And it sounds like this report, and I've not read the report from New York,
right,
is that, again, early days of finding their sea legs on writing the rules and enforcement. They don't have the resources and the expertise at this point in time, but they will get there.
And there have been other stories. I mean, there's universities that have done studies where they found pesticides, or there have been recalls, obviously, like in Nevada, where they've had products that had to be taken off the shelves because they were able to find various contaminants within the product. So the call numbers were brought out, they had to pull them off.
Mm-hmm.
So we're responsible. That was all that part that was going on as well. But the other thing, too, is that when it comes to cannabis cultivation, on our grassroots program about a week or so ago, and, you know, listen, they're talking about the future of cannabis cultivation. And I'm not going to, you know, mention names. I'm just going to make the point. And by the way, the investigation, like I said, we're not confirming, we're not verifying. We did not self-verify ourselves. I only bring up the story because of the fact that, you know, if these kind of things can be brought up and a lowly newspaper can go and find this out, then that means that there are some things that are going on within other businesses and their cultivation, you know, environments that they need to again be taken care of, because these kind of things should not be getting out in the press anyway. People should just be able to go ahead and be, you know, accountable and responsible for their grows and do what they need to do to go above and beyond what the compliance, you know, of these control boards are not going to do. That's not their problem. They're not going to be considerate about that. They're going to just, they only know what they're going to know. The growers know what is going on. Like you said, they stay asleep. They try to stay asleep at night, but they're still worried about the fact that if they're going to be microbials, they're going to be on their plants and whatever grow they have, no matter how many you know, measures they can have. This company I was going to mention, you know, they got AI technology, robotics. Oh, we're going to run a drone across the entire grill. It's going to be able to go and pinpoint all these areas where we might see contaminants. Well, that's great, but what about the human component? Like, you still need to have people on the ground that are checking the plants every day.
Yeah. We refer to the cultivators who've, I use the word ostrich, but if you don't have this microbial control solution in your SOPs, you're effectively playing COA roulette, waiting for them to come back. And that's why operators are staying up at night, because they don't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's electing to not buy or invest in the control step or incorporate one is, you know, hoping the problem will go away. It's the wrong approach. It's like being a little warm and jumping into the shark tank to cool off. You know, there are other ways to solve this problem that make economic sense. And I skipped through quickly the financials, you know, with 10,000 pound operator selling flour at $1,000 a pound and losing 20%, losing 2 million. Yeah, he sold off some of it, you know, for trim and biomass, because once it goes to manufacturing, you know, you don't have to be microbial compliant. But it cost them $1.8 million. So our FX unit cost $340,000. You know, it pays itself back in 3 months. Yeah. So it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. You know, we got to make mention of this, too, before we go to break again. That California, when we talk about the standards, and even back then in 2018, you talk about, yeah, no TYMC testing. Still don't have it 5 years later. Well, California, and I remember I was going to have somebody from California was going to talk about various issues when it came to the rollout of the, I think it was in LA County. Never got that person on, but I was ready for him. And I was like, well, you know, it's just, I would love to go and have some of these people go on board and figure that out. So the other,
well,
oh, go ahead.
Let me just say here. So I was a member of the California Cannabis Industry Association, one of the starters, and I think they're doing great work.
Yeah.
But we have quality control committee, and you know, I recommended that to the then, you know, CEO, and we set that up, all lab people, and you know, recommendation was to expand that testing down to the TYMC, TAMC. My assessment of the state of California was when they went rec, they knew they had a problem of the black market. It's entrenched, it's systemic, it's endemic. And they said, we're going to make this bar as low as possible for growers to move from the black market to the white market. And they wanted to have a very low bar. And so they said, we're not going to make it difficult for them. And so that has stood. And California is an outlier in terms of, you know, very, very lax microbial testing. As a matter of fact, you know, Zeal doesn't have a single unit operating in California.
Hmm. Amazing.
My peers pretty much, you know, don't either. So it's just it's a different approach. And I would argue it's time for a change in California.
Agreed. Now, one of the reasons why we might not see those kind of changes is because after the break, I want to bring up something that's pretty significant. That there maybe is a reason why certain state control boards do not want to change their compliance is because of who they're working with. That name is Metric. We're going to talk about that after a short break. And here, once again, the CEO and co-founder of Zeal, ZIEL.com. Look for that on the website, ZIEL.com. We're going to talk about the issues where it comes to having to coincide regulatory standards with platforms that are out there that are basically being able to be the end-all be-all in every state. We're going to talk about that after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
I'm back with final questions with Arthur de Cordova, CEO and co-founder of Zeal. And, you know, Arthur, it was so nice to have you back on and just go back and catch back up. And, you know, it's been 5 years too long. We got to get back to doing this a little bit more. A little more constant. I want to get you back on and keep having more conversations like this, because this really does open the eyes of people out there, and especially for the new year, very important. Metric, their website, actually, they put out a blog post about cannabis testing and compliance unpacked. And one of the areas I want to just pick, you know, it's one of those basic kind of tutorial kind of things. It would just like a kind of a standard blog post. But they make the point that the legal cannabis supply chain visibility is a critical component to enabling the monitoring of potential threats to public safety. That's why data collected in regulatory solutions providers like Metric, M-E-T-R-C, is configured to each state's unique cannabis testing regulations, allowing for quick identification, isolation, and regulatory hold on potentially unsafe products and plants and products. Now, another issue I've heard about across the board, I remember we talked with the Vermont Cannabis Alliance, that in Vermont, you know, the pricing for Metric as a tool that needs to be, whichever tool you're using, that must be Metric compliant. And the cost that goes behind that for some of these smaller growers is significant. And in most states, for the most part, it looks like Metric is the standard for which the data for all this testing has to go through. Metric has basically cornered the market on that. When you look at Metric and what they've been able to do in coinciding with, say, if they're using a product from Zeal and they must run the data and have it collected through Metric. Talk about that issue right there.
So probably the five most hated letters in the cannabis industry. It's a necessary evil. I mean, if someone's got to measure it in the chain of custody and regulatory compliance. And, you know, they've done, you know, out of MJ Biz, you know, used to have, we were just returned from last week, the people who were doing well, you would have a two-tier, you know, upstairs, upstairs. No one had two tiers this year. Only one booth had two tiers. Metric.
Right. Oh, boy. No, and I am not here to go and dispute Metric. We've already talked to Sam Peterson and the folks over there at Metric. Good people. Don't get me wrong. A lot of respect for them. We have a program right now that does, you know, program, and we cater to the fact of having tools that must go through Metric. So I'm not saying that at all about that, but it's just that it is one of those issues that is concerning about where, you know, is it going to go and shut out some of those other growers to be able to go ahead and work on products because of what they have to do to make sure they're Metric compliant. So there's that compliance along with what the control boards are saying. The control boards are saying, well, we're just going to, you know, rubber stamp Metric.
Well, I if I can unpack this a little bit.
Sure.
So one thing you're touching on is Metric's business model, what their cost is. And I can't speak to that.
Right.
That's something, you know.
We wouldn't want to. No.
In terms of Metric being a fair arbiter, you know, it's data in, data out. And so I don't see anything nefarious with what they do.
No.
Well, again, they're trying to, you know, provide a service that the regulators need to have. And, you know, I think they're, you know, neutral party. Again, you know, as much as people bemoan having to do everything through Metric, you know, it serves its purpose. I can't speak to, you know, what it costs a cultivator to do. I do think that, you know, the Metric being tailored to each state, we've got this patchwork quilt of regulations in the United States that is ridiculous.
Right.
And it makes, if you were an MSO, you've got to have different processes in each state you're operating in based on the regulatory framework of that state. So if you're looking for economies of scale as an MSO in this patchwork quilt, as they very well know, you know, that it's really expensive to be an MSO in the United States.
Yeah.
Very expensive. Versus, you know, a single state operator, you know, he knows what he's dealing with, and you build one system, and you go, but, you know, eventually, and again, if and when that day comes, there's FDA, there's going to be one standard, not 34,
right?
And you know, it'll get simplified, and you know, Metric will just recalibrate its criteria based on the federal standard instead of the state standard.
Yeah.
So I can't really speak too much about Metric's non-area I know too much about, but I think they do a commendable job.
Agreed. Very much agree. But it is one of those things where if there were any other products that were similar to Medrick, they've kind of been put by the wayside because most states have gone along and said, we're going to go with Medrick. They're going to use that for data collection, and that's the way it is. But that's one of those things where if we're going to have some universal framework, you know, all we're doing is sounding the alarm. That's all I've been doing for the last 5-6 years in this program, sounding the alarm, making sure people are responsible and accountable, continue to go and talk about compliance, and just hitting people over the head until they realize, okay, you don't want to be another CanTrust. I will keep saying that. It's like a drink volume. I will say it again and again.
The CanTrust failure was not a failure of regulatory compliance. It was intentional deceit. I mean, if people want to cheat the system, they will attempt to do that.
Yeah.
But you know, they eventually caught up with them, and
it's just an extreme case, and it's one of those where I don't think anybody's going to go to that level again. But it's one of those things where it's got to be above water, and that's what I'm worried about. So yeah. We're going to leave all that part of our compliance aside. I want to go back and talk about Zeal before we wrap things up, because of the fact that you now have, you know, the expanse that Zeal is out there. Worldwide clientele. You're commercially processing food and cannabis products with installations in the United States, Canada, Australia, Chile, Mexico, Germany, Portugal. Boy, I bet there's a lot of good stamps on your passport. So talk to me about some of the work you've been able to do to get this technology that grows worldwide, and really, you know, how it, in any language, all these companies that are working with you, with Zeal, they're understanding the same plight.
The customer in Chile is an interesting one because it was one of these niche markets, and they had an older generation machine, and the company is called Benexia.
Uh-huh.
And they work with farmers in Bolivia and Peru and Chile on chia seeds. Yeah. And they adopted radio frequency 7 years ago just for chia seeds. Right. And their customers are Nestle, Costco, Walmart.
Wow.
And they've been an advocate of the chia seeds, microbial pathogen reduction using radio frequency, which is an organic process. And so I don't know all their customers, but they have found the niche where they can market an organic processed seed. And chia seeds is one of those power foods that is right. Very much vogue these days. And that we just got back from Chile installing the next generation machine. Then this is different than our RFX machine, which is a batch process, which can do about 5 pounds in a 15-minute cycle. This is a whole different game. This is, you know, tons and tons of product, you know, a ton of product an hour in bulk. But, you know, we have been focused primarily on the growth in the cannabis market, and we've, I would say, back-burnered our food business. All our marketing is going towards the cannabis growth. But we have enduring customers, as you mentioned, Australia, United States, and the seeds, and Mexico, in the seeds and nut business. We're also working with a customer in Mexico that does sesame seeds. So there's certain niche products where this technology really lends itself well.
Fantastic. So good to get and catch up on this. And if I had more time, we'd put it on there, but I've got about an hour in this, so we're going to go ahead and wrap things up. But Arthur, thank you again so much for that. And website again, ZIEL.com. Anything else you want to make mention of for those that want to get to connect with you and your team so they can learn more?
We look forward to visiting them on our site and making it successful.
For a long time. And like I said, that's why I'm happy to go ahead and bring Arthur back on. And again, we will go ahead and always keep the door open for you and your team to go ahead and come on back. Arthur De Cordova, CEO and co-founder of Zeal, thanks for being on Blunt Business. As always, always glad to have you back.
Glad to be here, Rick.
All right. Thank you, and thank you, listeners, for listening in, to, as we always do, and we'll talk to you next time. We'll be right back.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.